Test Talks, episode 10.
Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Our cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks, and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up now at saucelabs.com/signup. Select the free Your Plan option and click the link I have a promo code to enter Test Talks 14 to get 20 hours of automated testing for free for a plan that never expires. And I'm extremely excited today to speak in with one of the top experts in the test automation field, Tarun Lawani. He's the founder of KnowledgeBox, a website dedicated to QTP and Automation Research Labs, a company focusing on providing consulting research, training, and publishing services for test automation. Tarun is also the author of three books, the UFT QTP Interview Questions Unplugged, QTP Descriptive Programming Unplugged, and QTP Unplugged, which is one of the top books on Quick Test Professional out there. You may also know him as the moderator of the QTP message board at sqaforums.com. And for the past few years, he's also been expanding his automation expertise in Selenium. Today, we will be speaking with him about one of the heavily debated topics in software automation, QTP versus Selenium. It's going to be epic. Check it out. Hi, Tarun. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hi, Joe.
So before we get started, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
So I've been based out in Delhi, India. I started my career in IT back in 2004 with Infosys. And like many of people know me as an automation expert, but what they don't know is I worked as a manual tester for first 4 years of my career. And I had actually completed my first QTP book during that time only. So though I was a manual tester, but I always had interest towards automation and I used to do things on my own. And that is where I picked up QTP and wrote my first book also. From there, it's always been I wanted to do something within automation only, and I wanted to help others also with my knowledge. So that was the reason I started with my own blog, knowledgeinbox.com. Then I've been active on SQA forums and other forums as well, and publishing articles, creating tools that help people in automation. Just to expand on that, last year I started with my own venture called Tar Labs, where I'm trying to promote automation in the industry. So I'm not trying to just promote automation in testing, but what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to promote automation even where people do one-time tasks. So let's say you are doing a one-time migration, which is going to take a lot of effort. So what we are trying to do is we are trying to develop automation solutions which are specific to people's need. We are using open source tools also a lot these days. So when I started my career, I started with QTP and I've worked for 8 years or so. I started back when it was QTP 8 and today it's like UFT 12. So there have been a lot of changes and all, but within last 2 years, we have realized that it's not just QTP which would actually help people out with automation. So now we do a lot of work which is related to Selenium also. And not only Selenium, but we do other things which use things like PHP, Python, Scrapy, import.io. So there are actually a lot of tools out there in market which are used for automation. They are helping different people with different needs. So it's now I think test automation is not just a need for testing. It's more about automation being applied wherever there is some amount of manual work.
Excellent. Well, you touched on a lot of things, so we'll probably try to expand on some of them. So in your experience recently then with your companies, how many clients now between QTP and Selenium, are they going towards one more than the other? Is one being used more than the other that you've been seeing recently?
So see, there is no specific trend as such, because what happens is if a company is already using one of the tools, then migrating to another tool, it's a big question. Whether you want to spend so much of effort and then migrate to another tool or not. So there are a lot of things that come in picture. What we did recently for one of our US clients, for them, we had developed the whole QTP architecture from scratch. We had developed the whole QTP framework for them because their application is a lot of Ajax-based stuff, and we had a lot of issues even in QTP. Just to tell you one text box where we have to set a value, there is a autocomplete list being shown. We had to write at least 200 lines of code in QTP also to make that very reliable. And because it is Ajax, it's not always easy. And during the test, when you are populating, let's say, 100 controls, even if the Ajax population fails on one control, it will fail the whole test. So we had to work a lot on QTP also for such issues. So what we decided, we said, let's just explore Selenium and see how well it does with our application. During our first experimentation, what we did is we just developed a very small script. And what we realized is our QTP script, which was taking close to an average of 4 minutes from pushing the start button till we get the results, that same thing was completed in Selenium within 2.5 minutes. Now, there were a lot of difference when we tested this. Reason being, in the Selenium script, we were just purely running a simple flow. There was no loading of the data from external files or anything. But still, that difference was noticeable. So what we realized is, let's say if I'm able to reduce down 4 minutes to 2.5 minutes, it might be possible that I may be able to reduce speed of other test cases, even let's say by 2 minutes. That means around, if we are automating, let's say 60 odd test cases or longer test cases, I am still getting a saving of 20% or so. So what we did in that case is we showed the demo to the client. They were happy and they said, let's explore the complete migration from QTP to Selenium. So that is where we started this whole migration. It took us close to four and a half months to actually come up with an approach for them, which was more suitable in terms of maintenance and everything. But what we realized is, first of all, we reduced their 3-hour execution suite to just 2 hours using Selenium. So that was like a one-to-one comparison. And what happens with the QTP is, because their design has been such that they allow running only one test case on a single machine, but Selenium is more like bound to a browser that you launch. So I can launch multiple browsers and they can work independently without interfering with the others. Because in QTP, the interference is there as they recognize the browsers at UI level. But in Selenium, when you launch a browser, it is bound to that object which or the code where you have launched it. So there is no interference between two different browsers that you launch. And what that allowed us to do is, on the same machine, we gave the client a way to launch up to 6 number of browsers, which is what we came up with when we were testing. Because the more number of browsers you launch, the system will become slow and then you will have a higher failure rate also. So the suit that was 2 hours with 6 browsers, we made it just to 20 minutes. So you can see that there was a huge difference between the time that QTP would have taken on the same machine, which we finally bought down by Selenium.
That's incredible. So the savings, is it mainly due because you're able to run multiple browsers on a machine, or is it even just the execution time, one-to-one is better?
See, the thing is, QTP, it has a lot of internal built-in stuff. So they have their own interface, they have object repositories, they have data tables, all those things. So, see, when a framework is putting so much stuff, you have a boot-up cost then you have a another cost wherein, let's say, internally it is recording everything in the reporting engine and all those. So a lot of things happen in background, which means you have less control over the performance of the tool, and you can control some amount of performance of the script. But here, because we are just, Selenium is not like a tool, it's an API. So we are just getting an API to be able to interact with the browser. So because it's just an API, we have better control over how we shape up our framework, what best practices do we use, and also what kind of boot up time do we keep, and are we able to share resources across multiple test cases or not. So it is based on our design that we can reduce a lot of time. And what I felt is, we were able to reduce a lot of time, though there were certain things where we had to spend time, let's say, same thing working in Firefox but not working in IE. There are at times differences between the drivers or the response that you get from different browsers within Selenium, but it's not something that's not worth doing. So if I can change my client's 3-hour execution, even using 1-to-1 machine, if I can change that 3-hour to, let's say, 2-2.5 hours also, 30 minutes is not bad.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. So this sounds like a big project to me, though, going from a big-time QTP installation solution to straight to Selenium. Did you see any other issues that you found migrating, or any other pain points you think other people would run into if they're trying to migrate from QTP to Selenium?
Yes, knowledge is one of the basic things that comes in the way. Reason being, when we are working with QTP, you have a very good tool called Object Repository. So you just click on a mouse button and the object is added. The QTP itself determines what identifier should be used, and it has all its algorithms, smart identification, and all those things. But when you land up into Selenium, see, CSS and XPath, these are two key things which you need. And when you look at QTP, CSS and XPath are still not popular with people who are actually working on QTP. So that is a big difference, wherein the amount of understanding that you need for these technologies and these languages is quite higher compared to what you would actually need in QTP. But another good part of that is, because it enforces you to learn more about the technology, that means you are able to develop solutions which are better in nature compared to what a person who has less knowledge, because the tool is able to do a lot of stuff.
Right. Okay. So the tool almost forces you to force yourself to do better practices. I guess with QTP, you can get kind of lazy because it does a lot of things for you out of the box. But with Selenium, I would think you have to really think and pre-plan what you're about to do to make a really good framework. Do you agree with that?
Yes. And the thing is, see, because anything that's easy to understand or easy to learn, people miss a lot of things, and people don't understand that. See, if you are testing HTML, you should be knowing the HTML technology also well. That is when you will become a good tester. And the problem in the community or in the practices is that people want these testers or people who are actually using automation to be less knowledgeable. So they say that we want our manual testers also to be able to do automation or execute automation on our test cases, which is not bad. But the thing is that you should not say that they should not learn technology, because it's in today's world, even in testing, a tester is actually expected to know some amount of the technology well. See, I'm not asking you to code a JavaScript. I'm not asking you to write a CSS file and do the positioning, but I'm just asking you to understand it well, so that when you are testing it, you know how you are supposed to test it. And if there is something wrong, or if there is something that you have to go do out of the way, then you should be able to do it. Because, see, every tool, be it QTP, be it Selenium, there are situations wherein you expect something to work, but it does not work. So let's say you are filling in a text box, and once you're filling the text box, there is a button that should be enabled. So when in QTP that does not happen, you change the replay type to 2 and make it activate the mouse-based events. But when in Selenium, if that is not happening, what do you do? So you have to fire an event in JavaScript. So So these are things that you have to understand, that in practical automation or in real life automation, things would not always go straightforward. What is supposed to work may not work, and that is where you have to know the technology or know the background stuff well, so that you are able to implement those workarounds. Because I have done so many projects, and I've not seen one project where I would not have to build a workaround around an issue which is supposed to work, but it does not work with the tool.
Great. Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think I agree with you. I think people do need to have a basic understanding of the technology that they're testing, because there are going to be situations where you're going to have to do workarounds. I myself have never been on a project where everything went smoothly, so I definitely agree with that. Mm-hmm. So along those same lines, so if someone's a QTP engineer, how much programming experience do you think they need in order to get up to speed with Selenium to be able to use it in a way that they can automate a simple or moderately simple application without any issues?
So there are two parts to it. One thing is when somebody is actually starting with QTP or they already know QTP, VBScript is a very, very concise scripting language. You just have, let's say, 100 odd functions. Somebody who's actually good at learning would be able to learn VBScript within few days and should be able to do well. Now, but what happens with QTP is you are bound to VBScript. You cannot jump out of it. But when it comes to Selenium, the best part is the way they have designed is it is based on a JSON wire protocol. So which is more like a HTTP based protocol, wherein within the browser or outside the browser, they launch a web server to which this JSON wire protocol communicates. And what that does is most of the languages, they support HTTP interaction. So let's say PHP has curl for that, Python has PyCurl for that. So because of that, there have been a lot of bindings in different languages. So if you look today, Selenium has binding in almost all languages. So you have bindings in JavaScript, you have bindings in PHP, you have Python, you have Java, you have C Sharp, then you have Perl, then you have Objective-C. So you can see almost all languages are there for you to choose. So it is up to you what language you are more comfortable with, which makes it easier for you to even jump into. Let's say if you are comfortable with PHP, pick PHP and get into it. You will be able to code Selenium, and you won't believe, in last 6 months, I have myself worked on 5 different Selenium bindings, from PHP to Python. And then we have also worked on Java, C Sharp, and others also. So the thing is, because once you have learned it in one language, the concepts are similar. So in QTP, you have an object repository, or the way descriptive programming works, if you understand that over there, you can understand how object identification or how object locators work in Selenium. So mapping the concept from there, a browser gets mapped to here as a driver. So you just have to understand what was there in QTP and then what is it mapped to over here. And the next thing is, then you have to understand the language. And since you have a huge choice of languages to choose from, it is up to you which language you jump into. Of course, whichever language it is, you will need to know the basic stuff of it first. And then if you want to better design the solution, you will need to know the OOPS concept and all those things, so that you can design a better solution or a better framework within that language.
Awesome. So this is a question I get asked a lot for some reason on my blog is, you know, what programming language should I learn? And you bring up a great point. You know, there's pretty much bindings for every language. Pick one and go with it, learn it. And I like what you said, how like once you learn one, it's basically the same principle. So it's maybe just a matter of learning a different syntax if you have to use another language, but those concepts are still the same. Once again, if someone's coming from QTP, what's the equivalent to something like an object repository in Selenium? Would you say that's a page object, or is there some other method way that you would mimic an object repository?
So people may or may not agree with what I comment right now, but I am not somebody who's quite in favor of page objects when it is being used in a compiled language. The reason I say that is, see, if I am using Java, or let's say I'm using C Sharp, if I put all my locators by specifying certain or by decorating my fields with certain attributes which specify which locators I will use, and then I use that class. See, what I'm doing is I am binding that locator in a hard way with my code. So tomorrow, if I want to change the locator, I have to go and recompile my code and build something up. So that is something that I really do not like. And that is one good part in QTP, wherein, let's say, if you are building a descriptive programming approach, many people use an external Excel file, or they may use an XML or a database or anything. But it is external to the script, which means tomorrow, if an locator has to be changed, I can just go change it and run it. And since VBScript, again, it's not compiled, so you don't need to do anything. You make a small change, which could be done through a text editor or anything, and it would work. But in languages like C# or Java, where the code is getting compiled, I don't like the idea of hard binding my locators or identifiers within the code. I want it to be external. So what we recently did, as in when we started this migration, earlier we had developed one framework, but then we realized that for some reason we have still that compilation issue. So not because of the object repository, we kept it external. But still, if I have to go and change one of the flows, I still had to recompile my whole code. So what we did is we built a whole new framework wherein we designed it in a way which would help us reduce the pains. So pains like, let's say, when you are trying to click on an object. In most of the implementations, what you would do is you would have a logging function wherein you would call that log function saying that we are trying to click on this. Then you will check for error whether did it work or not. If it worked, you will report a pass, then you will report a fail. So basically, for performing one step operation, I am actually writing 6-7 lines of code. What we realized is we need a framework in such a way that when I am defining the click operation, I should be able to even tell it how to document. And what we did is internally within our framework, we made certain smart calls wherein, let's say, when somebody is clicking an object, our code determines whether it's a link, it's a button, and it automatically documents that clicked on button, and then it also takes the name from the website. And so even if I'm clicking on a button with identifier, let's say btn text or btn login, but the button says login, then my code will automatically say clicked on login button. It won't say clicked on BTN login. So we made things like that. And another thing we did is we kind of defined a new way of defining all the keywords and set of keywords. So it is all external to the code. The core part of the code is to provide the infrastructure, but not integrate the code that is actually testing the application into that C# framework. So we wanted to keep everything as external files so that tomorrow, if I have to change anything, I am not dependent on compiling anything. It could be very quick change. I can just go ahead, change the thing in the text file. And we kind of looked at Robot framework, which is a framework from Python. We liked it, but we wanted to do something in C#, which is similar to it, but not exactly like that. So we were quite happy with the way Robot framework, which is a Python framework for Selenium, works. But then we wanted to do far better than that. And we have a longer vision for this framework that we have developed. And we do plan to release it in a future as an open source framework. And we believe that it will change the way we do automation right now. So like most of the frameworks you would have heard use Java. But I think once we launch this for the community, I'm certainly sure that this would change, or this would improve the way we write our Selenium test cases. And it would be a very, very powerful framework, because I have been there working as an automation engineer. So I know what are our pain points, and there is no easy solution to it. So we are going to develop this in stages, and somewhere down the line, we are going to release it as an open source tool. Because, see, Selenium is open source. There has been a lot of effort by community to grow it. And that is what we also want to do. It is that whatever effort we are putting in, we want to help others also take fruit from that effort.
That sounds awesome. Now, did you say this is going to be a C-sharp framework?
So it is going to be a C-sharp framework. But what we are trying to do is we are trying to experiment with how things should be written. So we are trying to create another way of writing test cases, but we are trying to standardize a lot of things. That way you can mix best practices during your creation of the test case itself. So it may be possible that we right now do this as a C-sharp project, but in future, if we think it would be better to even implement the whole framework out there in Python, because the thing is, we can run C-sharp. Our framework would actually support Mono. So basically, you can run it in Linux also. But the way Mono is supported and compared to what Python or something else is supported on Linux is different. So that is the reason we will do this in C-sharp on a longer term. But in case we see that, yes, it would be worth moving this to Python or something else so that it is better supported on all platforms, then we would take that call.
Awesome. I definitely agree with you that there's not really a solution out there for C-sharp. Like you said, there's some for Java. I think there's some frameworks for Python, but I haven't really seen a good one for C-sharp. I think that'd be a really awesome contribution to the automation community.
Yeah, so because the way I vision it is a lot of things within the framework which will not only make it easy to use, but more powerful to use also. So see, I've worked with BPT also, which is the HP framework. So they say that we want to simplify stuff, but we also want to take away the flexibility of being advanced so that you keep things simple. And that is something where I always felt that, see, I want my framework to be simple, but I don't want it to be restrictive in nature. I want it to be simple, but I want it to be powerful also, wherein if you are willing to do any advanced stuff with that, I will let you do it. To give you an idea, I met HP team in Israel, I think 2-3 years back. On BPT topic itself, we were discussing that they should allow communication between different components that are there. So they said that, see, we want to keep it independent. We want people not to communicate between two components. So it is, let's say, in a test case, if I am creating one order, let's say an order number or something, which I want it to be shared across test case. So in BPT, it is possible you create an output parameter, then keep it passing one place to another, which creates a mess. And it's an add-on thing wherein every time if I have to access that value, I'll have to take an input parameter. And what I have seen is people are actually writing code wherein, let's say, in one component, at the end of the component, they would write that value to a text file. And then in the next component, they would read that text file and read that value. So in the end, I am needing that flexibility, which the framework is not giving me. Then it does not solve the point wherein you say we want to keep things simple. And then people have to work extra and implement things which you don't want them to implement in your framework. So that is where I felt that there is a need of a framework which should be powerful in nature. Let's say you should be, like, in our framework, what we are trying to do is we are trying to create a mix of data sets. So you could load one from a JSON file, one from a text file, one from a CSV, and give it as a single data set to the test case. So these are the kinds of flexibility that we are working on right now. And it is something which is going to give a lot of things in the user's hand. You would be able to implement the best practices from the word go.
I like the concept of BPT, but I've never been able to successfully have a framework. Like you said, you start getting a bunch of components just because you're entering text and then you're reading it in the next component, and then the performance really starts to slow down, and it's really makes it more difficult, I think, because they're trying to make it so easy. It makes it almost more difficult. So I definitely agree with you. If you can make it easy yet also have the flexibility, I think you have a really good framework on your hands.
And see, it is their product. It's not an external product. So you expect more out of it from a company which is actually owning both the product. When we are doing something externally, we can say that we are limited by this or we are limited by that. But when it is both the tools are yours, the expectations are quite higher in comparison to what you would have when it's something external.
So along the same lines of migrating from QTP to Selenium, another obstacle I can see happening is that, in my experience, most people that use QTP also use ALM or Quality Center to store their scripts and to run their scripts and their test labs, store the results. So with Selenium, how do you solve that problem? Do you still use ALM that calls a Selenium script, or is there another solution that you would recommend for someone that's kind of like ALM but more open source that works with Selenium?
I think it's a very good question, but it is very environment dependent. So let's say if today I am using ALM, somebody else is using Jira for their management, and some third person is using totally something else. So what we try and say is that keeping your test cases, everything in ALM would actually not be of much help. So if I am actually uploading my test cases into ALM, then it may not be of too much of requirement. But what I would actually need is, once a test case is executed, if I'm able to see that report out there in ALM, that is something that I would want to see. And now, because like ALM also supports the REST API, and Jira again also has its own API, so it is quite easier for you, somebody, to actually develop or use a REST-based solution and put data, or maybe once the test is completed in your Selenium test case, whichever language it is, you use the API to communicate that back to ALM. So what I would suggest is, you don't need to store your test cases in ALM, because that would make things a bit messier, because again, you have to check out from there, download it, and it's not a versioning repository. So we use SVN right now. A lot of people use Git also. But ALM is not a solution for that. So ALM, I would say that you may want to see the whole status in ALM, wherein if one test case has executed, has it passed or failed. Also, then we can upload the HTML reports with that and all those things. So that is possible, and that is to the extent what people should go for, not storing their test cases within ALM, because I don't think it's a recommended solution. So you should be more looking at a Git or a SVN kind of thing, which actually stores your test cases. And when it comes to reporting, you can do anything, because the tools have their own APIs, and you can always write a solution, though it would be an extra effort compared to, because when you are running it directly from QTP, it is directly integrated into ALM and all those things. But I've seen a lot of people facing issues also with that. So though it might integrate very well, but there are occasions wherein people have faced issues, not able to run test cases from ALM, all those things. So I would say that best thing to do is keep your framework external, test cases external. If you want to do reporting, use whichever tool you are using. Do the reporting through an API. And maybe if you don't want to do it in the test case itself, do an offline batch upload. So let's say 100 test cases execute. They go into, the result goes into queue, which could be a database XML. Then another job runs and picks up those results, puts everything back into ALM. So it, depending on what your need is, whether you are looking for something which updates instantly within ALM to show you what is happening, or something that can be done in a delayed manner also.
Great. So are there any resources or books you recommend to, say, someone that's already a QTP engineer who wants to learn Selenium? Are there any resources you found that were helpful to you as you were making that transition from QTP to Selenium?
I would say that web out there is having a lot of examples when it comes to Java, a lot of articles, a lot of good websites also. So I don't have one, but what I usually do is, any good article or any good website that I find, I add it to my Feedly feed, and I make sure that everything that they're publishing from time to time, I keep myself updated with those. So what I would recommend is go out there, find out websites which have articles, and subscribe to their feed.
So this is one of the areas that I think people may get confused, because when they do search the web, they'll find a lot of information on Selenium, but because there's so many language bindings, the information they're looking for may not be exactly what they need. So if they find an article, it may be specific to the Ruby implementation, but not necessarily the Java one or the C# one. Do you see those type of issues as you're reading articles you come across on the internet about Selenium?
See, for you, it should not matter that you... I am quite comfortable with C#, Java, and most of the bindings. But this framework that we did it in C#. But it does not matter to me whether I am reading an article from Java or JavaScript or anything else, because I am just trying to understand the concept that they have used, and then I can implement it in my own language. And there are a lot of resources out there. You actually do not need a book.
So having worked with QTP for so long and being an expert in QTP, how long did it take you to actually ramp up with Selenium?
The thing is that because I've had a lot of experience back there from QTP, it did not take me a lot of time to understand what is happening out here. And my coding skills have been already been, I used to code in C#. I developed that Power Debug add-in, which was for QTP, in C# only. So my skills were already there. So it did not take me much time to actually adapt from QTP to Selenium. But what I would say is you need to focus some part on the language. You don't need to know the complex stuff on the language as such. So let's say if you are using C# and all, you don't need to dive into concepts like threads and all those things. You need to learn basic stuff. How do I create a class? How do I use an interface? How do I create a function? How do I create a static one? And small stuff. So you don't need to go big and because the C# book that I had, it's like more than 1,000 pages. So if I just keep it, somebody would think that, oh gosh, I have to start with Selenium and go through that also. So it's like you get through the basic first and see the languages are very vast. Be it Selenium, Java, Python, there is huge, huge amount of knowledge that you would get out there on the web. But you need to grab only the stuff that you need right now. And once you have time on hand, you start exploring into the other zones, because it is important to know more, because the more knowledge or more things you know about, more tools you know about, then when there is a problem, you would know which one would be a better thing to use as a solution.
So let's explore that a little bit more. How do you really know which tool is best for your application? So QTP versus Selenium, you go to a company, how do you determine which tool to use?
See, when we look at Selenium or we are trying to implement it at any of the clients, we first check, do they have anything where they'll require password windows? Do they have anywhere where they have modal dialogues? So we look for problem areas that might make life difficult. Because, see, a password window, which is very easy to handle in QTP, you have to go through a lot of pain to get it working in Selenium. So when the technology jumps from web to mix, because password window is a native window of the browser, it is not web page window. So it really gets tough during those times, and then you have to use workarounds like you have to use an auto8 script to get it working. Recently, when we were trying to do that in Firefox, we took a Firefox add-on from the net, which is used for saving proxy authentication. We modified it in such a way so that we can set certain parameters by creating a profile using Selenium. And then when we launch Firefox, it would automatically authenticate on that proxy and we would not get the username and password window. So it took us like 3 days to actually handle that password window. And we had to go out of the way, modify a Firefox add-on and get it working.
Yeah, that's great advice, because, you know, that's one thing. People ask, what tools should I use? And, you know, there's not one tool that's better than the other. It depends, like you said, on your environment, what your application is doing. For example, I have a browser-based application that we have, but it's old, so it uses ActiveX controls. So if someone used Selenium for that, they may be fine the first few screens, but once they hit those ActiveX controls on the older screens, they're going to have a problem. So I agree with you. You really need to not be biased. You need to go in and actually choose what tool is best for your application in your environment, right? I think that's good advice. Talking about books, I know you're an author of, I believe, 3 books, and you wrote the book, I think, on the QTP that is like the Bible of QuickTest Professional. It's the go-to book. So are there any other books you're working on that may be slanted more towards Selenium in the future?
So I do seriously want to write one for the Selenium community also, because, see, the way I am exploring Selenium right now, I don't think a lot of people out there are actually going to be exploring it that way. And because I get experience from writing the last 3 books, I know one thing: whenever I'm going to get time to write this one, it's going to be the one of the best books on Selenium. But the thing is that right now my focus is more on getting this framework progress so that we can get it to a stage where we can either at least release it as a beta, maybe without source for initially. And once we get the feedbacks, make it better, and then maybe open source it. So we have not yet decided yet. So my focus has been on that. But I am really keen on writing one book, because I have explored Selenium not just from outside. I'm actually at times digging into the source code also. I'm trying to understand how things are working in the background. How does the Firefox add-on works? I recently made a change in the IE driver server. So see, one of the biggest complaints that people had is you cannot connect to an existing browser in Selenium. So this, if you go in Selenium forum, I think you might find that this issue is listed in, I think, first 30 issues or so. So it might be 20 or something, or maybe 17. But it is still an open issue. So you can imagine the list being close to 6,000 right now. And this is the 17th or the 20th issue. And it is still open for years. So at Tar Labs, see, we have not been able to build a solution for that. But all three browsers, Chrome, Firefox, and IE, we have developed a solution that we are using internally right now to connect to a browser that was launched using Selenium, if it is Firefox or Chrome, which means, because see what happens is, if you are running a test case, you launch a driver. In Java or C#, there is no easy way for you to reconnect to that browser. So in QTP, it is quite easy, right? We just run our script from in between and it is able to connect to that browser. But because of the way Selenium is designed, it gets quite difficult for the code to reconnect to those browsers. Though some of the bindings do allow it, like PHP binding does allow it to do that, wherein if you save the session ID of the browser, you can reconnect to it. But we implemented a solution. We modified the IE driver server to be able to connect to an existing IE, which was not even opened using Selenium. You can connect it to by either its title or by its handle. And what that even allowed us is we were able to experiment it out on a C# or a custom browser application. So Selenium cannot be actually used where you are embedding a browser in let's say, a C# application. But we were even able to do that and make it connect to the C# application and work on that browser, but only the browser. So you cannot work on the rest of the UI as such. But you can still work using the Selenium IE driver server connection and reroute it. So we are experimenting on a lot of things right now with Selenium. And what we want to do is, in future, bring it to a level where people are very confident that I would be able to implement Selenium without any issues. If I am, they would be comfortable leaving QTP, and they would be happy moving to Selenium also, because right now when you see Selenium identifies everything as a web element, wherein when you look at QTP, you get web edit, you get web button, you get web table. So you have methods like get cell data, you have something like find cell with text. When you jump into Selenium, everything is gone. So you do not have these things wherein a table is getting identified as a table. It's a web element. You have to write everything yourself, which makes things a bit difficult. And what has happened is, I think there has to be a focus of someone to actually make a library which is a de facto third party or de facto external Selenium library, which would be used by everyone. Because that is when things will pick up. That is when it would be easier for everyone to migrate to Selenium.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the services your company offers, and what is the best way we can find or contact you?
We do consultation in QTP and Selenium. Then we do framework implementations. We are right now more focused on Selenium because we are trying to develop what may be a future product, and we also are looking at making it open source. And then the another part of automation that we do is custom automation. So see, a lot of people have their own custom needs when it comes to automation, and it's an end-to-end kind of an automation. So right now we had a project where our client required, they get leads from different sources in their mailbox, and then they put it into their CRM system, and then so somebody has to go to the mailbox, see which leads are there, then pick it up, call the client, and all those things. So we automated this whole process from them, wherein we monitor their mailbox. As soon as an email arrives, we check whether it's a lead or not. If it is a lead, we extract all the details, and we are getting leads from different sources. So it's not like one way to extract the data. You have to put in a lot of things out there to extract that information out of it. Then we automatically built a employee allocation logic for them, wherein it would look who is handling what kinds of job, how many jobs are they allowed, what kind of load do they already have for that day, and then assign a new person to that job, send the client email to a client saying that this person is looking into it. We send the email to the employee also that this job has been assigned to you. Then we put the job in their CRM, which was a method CRM. Again, we were using SOAP APIs this time, not REST APIs. So we are actually doing a lot of custom solutions which are not related to maybe Selenium or QTP. And when it get the best way to contact is either through our website, knowledgeinbox.com or tallabs.com. Or even if you Google my name, you'll be getting a lot of ways to contact me.
Thank you for joining me on Test Talks. And remember, you can find the links to everything of value that we talked about today in the show notes at www.testtalks/10. And as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.